Today's title for my talk is Anatomy of a Split. I think the idea of splits is an important way of looking at what makes people tick. Even as a child, I wanted to know what made people, myself included, act the way we do. I'd like to define split the way I see it. A split is when who you think you are branches off into a different version of who you think you are. Usually there is some sort of force involved in that. It could be an internal force or an external force. Just imagine that a D student comes to the conclusion that they want to be an A student, and then they start taking action in that direction. That decision to become an A student, in my opinion, is a split. There could also be an external force applied to the situation. This is where a child who feels they are good and life is good becomes abused. In that abuse, a different decision is made, perhaps one that says, I am bad. The good child, that energy pattern, that identity still exists, but now another one exists as well, the bad child. If you wanted to think of these two scenarios differently, think of, in one case, a volcano with the internal pressure building until it expressed. And you can see this happening with growth in a lot of different situations. And the second point of view is like a bomb. Everything is going okay, and all of a sudden this huge amount of energy is added to a situation that explodes the identity of that person into at least one other identity. We know that energy inputs affect us. Maybe more so when we're in motion. If you were standing still and I touched you and pushed you slightly, maybe nothing would happen. But if you were walking and someone pushed you even a tiny bit, your path would be changed. If you were driving your car on the highway and an adjacent car encroached upon you, started to move into your lane, automatically you would move away to avoid impact. In that case, no physical energy was actually exchanged, just the possibility was enough to cause a change in path. So you could look at that scenario where you, on some level, sense this car moving into your lane, that's energy that just happened. Now, there was no touching, but in fact, your energy field perceived the encroaching energy field of the other vehicle. I recently saw a drawing of the neurons in the brain, and recently I decided to look up a picture of a river with its tributaries. In one case, the neuron branches off, splits into multiple branches, which continue to split. In the case of the river, the branches, or the tributaries, flow energy back to the main river. The branches feed the river, whereas the neurons feed the split off branches. Now, clearly, there's a two-way energy flow in both of those situations. And I can see both of these situations applying to the human condition. First, the energetic inputs cause the splits. Think of any choice you make. The other day I was considering, I just had lunch. Catherine and I made choices of the proteins that we were going to have. Our choices were between filet mignon, hard-boiled eggs, cottage cheese, or chicken. All plain, no sauces. Those were branches that appeared before us, and we chose filet mignon. We had a choice of vegetables, one vegetable at each meal. We had a choice of mushrooms, onions, broccoli, or cabbage. We chose mushrooms. We could choose one fruit to have after the meal, and our choices consisted of blueberries, oranges, apples, and we chose blueberries. The choices we made directly reflect the splits, and we chose to follow the split in one direction or another, as they were our preferred paths. the filet mignon is what we preferred, and we moved in that direction, as were the mushrooms and the blueberries. We made those choices, we saw those splits, and we followed. When you look at a newborn baby whose eyes are opened and is observing his or her environment, you get the impression that this child has unlimited potential for health, happiness, and success. And then as you see how some parents relate to young children, you realize that potential is being thwarted and distorted. About 8 or 10 years ago, a person called me on the telephone. He had found me on the internet and thought I could help him. He said, "I'm so close to resolving my problem, but it's just outside of my reach. So I'm calling you because I think you can help me." He was 54 years old and he had multiple sclerosis. As he started to talk, I interrupted him. "Do you know that you're describing your birth to me?" He blurted out, "I didn't push hard enough." He went on to tell me that he never pushed himself hard enough to try out for Little League, the honors program in high school, any sports at all. In his career, he never pushed himself to get more skills or education. He never pushed himself to get more responsibility, promotions, recognition, pay increases. I said, "Babies don't push. They have rubber arms and legs. They're pushies, not the pushers." And he was quiet. In my opinion, this is what happened. Someone said or thought the words, "didn't push hard enough." And the baby interpreted that statement to be directed at him. This energy exchange experience could have been right after birth, could have been during labor. The mother could have been admitting this to the doctor. The doctor could have been saying that to the mother, "You didn't push hard enough." So I consider this occurrence to be the split. At one moment, he was a full potential being. In the next, he was split into a secondary identity controlled by the energy of "didn't push hard enough." I suppose it's possible to think the full potential being as being totally lost after that experience. But I can't imagine that we can kill or destroy or completely sublimate the natural tendencies being powered by divine consciousness, such as growth, nurturing and nourishing, healing and repair, protection, etc. The fact that this man was still seeking a solution to a long-term problem supports my viewpoint that we can't destroy that full potential self that exists, no matter what else we do to it. Birth order is an important concept. Children develop in their environments, and birth order is an environment. The conditions that exist in the lives of parents and in the family are environmental influences. Parents worried about money, another child, the responsibilities involved, add these energies into the developing child. Worries thus imparted are environmental signals impacting the child. Years ago at a family reunion, my then wife had an opportunity to talk to my siblings. She talked to each one in turn. There were 7 of us total. And after it was done, she said, "The descriptions each of you have of your parents indicates to me that you all had different parents." So you can assume that our parents, your parents, everybody's parents, change based upon the number of children and the number of experiences they have in their lives. Of course, a parent who is 20 is different than the parent who is 30 or 40. And so on. While the two parents are the main influences in an assumed normal, put that in quotes, family, siblings, grandparents, aunts, uncles, other geographically close relatives like cousins, friends of the parents, teachers, other adults, all add to the mix of energy exchange experiences that are used by all of us to create our identities. If we're praised, we start to blossom. If we're criticized, we start to shrink in self-protection. Even though I was the fifth out of seven children, I've recognized through my coaching experiences and studies the heightened challenge for the baby of the family. From my parental experiences, I would say it's very easy to mismanage the youngest child. Treating the youngest as a baby doesn't do much to strengthen them. Relaxing the rules of behavior dramatically can be a problem for them. I know of a third child, a son, who for years felt as though he was loved less than his older sister and older brother because his parents were much more permissive with him. He said, "They didn't care about me like they did with the other two." He saw the permissiveness as a lack of investment, a lack of caring, and his relative unimportances in his family and to his parents. He rebelled and made waves, primarily to antagonize his father in an attempt to draw out emotions. Unfortunately, the father shut down even more, since the rebel reflected poorly on him. What would the neighbors think? That was important to the father. When a child is considered an oops by the parents and or by himself or herself, complications can set in. For healthy parents, and I mean spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically, and financially healthy, the oops is a blessing, and it can be embraced as such. For other parents, in the unexpected pregnancy sets off a long chain of doubts, fears, hopes, etc. Maybe even turmoil. Any life plans they may have had have got to be revised to account for the unexpected addition, and all of this energy is added to the environmental influences affecting the coming child. A phrase that just came to me the other day was, "In order to be strong, you have to be long." I think it's true. We survived as cave people because we were able to create tribes. There's strength in numbers, as the saying goes. When we belong to a family unit or a community or a culture, we have a higher level of protection and security than if we were a lone individual. The unexpected child may feel a lessened sense of belonging, except in the healthiest of families. That sense can be worsened by the simple and ubiquitous human tendency to compare oneself to others. Rarely will a young child compare him or herself to older siblings and decide, "Wow, I'm the luckiest of all." Usually, the youngster will question him or herself for being smaller, weaker, less physically adept, and maybe lacking the freedom that the siblings have. "Something's wrong with me that I can't do what they do," goes the refrain. I had a client that called, wanted help. She was either from Wyoming or Montana, lived on a ranch with her three older siblings and her parents. The reason she wanted help is because she had problems with authority. Here she was in her 40s, battling anybody who told her what she could or couldn't do. We got back to a point where she was standing in the crib as a young baby, and her siblings were going out to ride their ponies, and she wasn't. She ranted and raved and screamed in that crib. She wanted to go ride a pony like her siblings could. She didn't understand why the authority was preventing her from doing this. And she took that split and realized, unfortunately, that she had the battle authority, because otherwise they were going to thwart her desires. So what options does a person have when the split is interpreted as not enoughness? I derived that term years ago at the end of 2 days of coaching when we lived in Kansas City, and I realized that the 9 clients I had seen had said the same thing to me. They all expressed a sense that they were not enough. Now, there was a defining word, a descriptive word that fit in between those two words. One was not smart enough, another was not rich enough, another was not good enough, another was not educated enough, another was not strong enough, thin enough, on and on. 9 different people said the same thing, that they were not enough. I realized that, hey, this is an epidemic, because it is that sense of not enoughness that drives us either into depression or into all kinds of efforts to overcome those feelings. The healthiest choice when you felt not enough would be to see this not enoughness as a challenge to be confronted directly, and worked on persistently until it was overcome. If I'm not strong enough, then maybe I could work on my nutrition and go to the gym and find exercises that would help me become strong enough. In this case, the focus is on the activity that gave rise to the interpretation. And self-consciousness leading to timidity wouldn't be a big influence, because we would be working on some process to overcome the not enoughness. Because we want to survive, and avoiding pain is connected to survival, avoiding the situations that trigger feelings of not enoughness, which can cause emotional pain, is a common option. Don't put your hand on a hot stove. But we overlook that most of the pain comes from the way we think and feel about environmental signals that we process, not from a physical activity like putting your hand on a hot stove. So other options include the option to be preemptively aggressive based on the belief that we have to protect our vulnerability, that is, our not enoughness, from other people realizing it. We don't want to reveal that we're not enough. We don't want to be exposed as not enough. So we're aggressive to overcome that. There is what I call the option of the goody two-shoes that appeals to victims that are drawn into being obsequious. By propitiating, they hope to avoid the pain of criticism and rejection for who they are. This type shows up in politics as lackeys and yes-men surrounding the powerful, particularly the powerful brutes. They're the hangers-on. And you can see those people not just in politics, but in all organizations. Another option is to cop an attitude of aloofness, which is a false facade of, I don't care, it's not important to me, I didn't want that anyway. This indicates an unwillingness to risk or to be vulnerable. For a person carrying enormous weight on a non-whole identity that's being split by traumatic events, poor choices in behaviors are common. The lack of deservingness handicaps a person. This is as if a person walks up to a buffet table, looks at everything available, it's a marvelous selection, and then decides that the best things on the table are not for him or her. They're for others, but not for him or her. I have mentioned the ACE study before, the ACE study. It's an analysis of the impact of people's lives of adverse childhood experiences, known as ACEs, ACEs. After about 15 years of study, Kaiser Permanente and the Centers for Disease Control have now shown that the people who have had these adverse childhood experiences suffer the consequences of poor decision-making later in life. Drug abuse, unwanted pregnancies, alcoholism, anger, self-hatred, victimhood, depression, smoking, relationship difficulties, serious illnesses of a wide, nasty variety, etc., can be attributed to these childhood experiences. To me, they are splits. In most religions, life is a process in which we work to become closer to God, to our source of being. In other words, we're trying to reduce the distance between and become unified as one with this source. This makes sense to me, as it's the solution to splits. Instead of splitting apart, it's about coming together. We want to reduce the distance between who we believe ourselves to be after the split and who we really are. In a world governed by electromagnetic impulses of bonding, rejection, and activities, we can heal the divide by finding the gift-giver value of the ACE, the adverse childhood experience, and bond with it. The saying, love conquers all, is true. When I consider the tendency of herd animals on the plains of Africa, I imagine the older, sicker, infirm animals moving away from the stronger, healthier herd as similar to what human beings do when they are stuck in shame from their traumas. It wouldn't be at all unusual for a child to be ashamed of their own family after seeing someone else's functional family. Back in my day, we used to watch Leave It to Beaver, Donna Reed Show, Ozzie and Harriet. And my family was not like any of those. That shame that causes the diminishment of one's identity and the withdrawal from others because of this belief in, because of my family, I am not enough. My family's not enough, and by extension, I am not enough. It is my opinion that a whole group of illnesses are the result of splits, such as chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, obesity, multiple sclerosis, ALS, and maybe even diabetes. I have now added bipolarity to that list. A whole person, whole in quotes, would have a normal range of emotions and behaviors depending on the circumstances and what response or reactions is appropriate, right? So if somebody stepped on your toe, you would move them off your toe. But if this emotion were to be in charge of that, then rage or other negative things could occur. I can imagine in bipolarity that the split or splits being significant enough to create two identities at the extreme ends of the spectrum that are different from the central identity. So here you have a person, and then there is a trauma that splits them into somebody who will be depressed and somebody who will be manic. Some will think they are lower than whale poop, and the other one thinks they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. But in between is the central identity. Think of the two extremes battling for dominance because of the intent of both of them, is to protect the individual, even though to outsiders, the approaches of mania and depression are obviously. These two patterns are not working well. On this seesaw of life, ups and downs are scary to everyone, and not fun for anyone. Splits are going to occur. They occur in almost every situation in one form or another, with the possible exception of coconut palm trees. The palm trees in my neighborhood are coconut palms, and they have no branches splitting off from the trunk, just one straight vertical trunk. So if splits are so common and unavoidable, what should we do? We should elevate our awareness. That's what we should do. When we eat food, our goal should be to get the most nutrition out of it as possible. When we drink water, we want to be providing the right amount of hydration to our bodies to include the hydration inside the cells. When we interact with others, our goals are to enjoy, to learn, be closer to others. By understanding their reality, that means the way they believe life works, that will lead to more compassion and even love for them and for our own humanity. When we have a farm lot or a gold mine, we will try to grow or extract value. And so it is with every energy exchange experience we have. We give the value of our energy and we obtain the value of other energies. Vegetables don't grow, tend themselves, harvest, or sell themselves. Gold doesn't mine itself. Human activity is required to make these processes valuable. To elevate our awareness about splits and its ramifications, we need to be able to get new points of view about them. I believe that at the foundation of every energy exchange experience, including traumas and tragedies, is good, is God. If that's true, we need to look more deeply at events in order to discover the good, the godness that resides within. No one would think that mining goal only consists of looking at the flat ground of your property. The same is true of life experiences. To extract value from your life experiences, you have to be willing to do a little bit of work. You have to be willing to go below the surface of events. This takes courage on the one hand and fear on the other. This is what I mean. You will want to envision a better, healthier, happier version of yourself who is closer to your full potential self. Your full potential self is what you could be, do, and have if the pain of splits and hurts and traumas were healed. You will want to have images of this version of you. These images, with specificity and emotionality and a strong why, will magnetically draw you to them. The fear that I mentioned is related to what happens if your current condition were to continue or get worse. If that problem has clear images that repel you, you will naturally seek to move away from them. The end result is you are being pulled forward and pushed forward, and both are helpful to you. Splits are not entirely bad. In fact, they have the possibility of great good in them, which we can discover, appreciate, and embrace. If you want to grow an avocado tree, or anything else for that matter, including yourself, you will need a seed that will split. If the shell or husk or outer layer of a seed won't split, it will not grow. Growing is the first requirement of life. In order to shift your view of splits and their after effects, you will shift out of victimhood and become an observer. Ultimately, you will recognize yourself as the attractive causer. But let's stay on the level of the observer for a minute more. As that observer, you can consider any and every event to be a gift. You could also assign a giver to that gift, whether it's you, God, some other person. And finally, by looking more deeply, you can discover the value in that gift. By finding the positive intent, you will change your entire energy field from resisting and rejecting these experiences and using an enormous amount of energy, mental, emotional energy, to keep them away, to a more powerful, positive field with the availability of those energies to be used to attract and create what you want exactly. As the acceptance, compassion, and gentleness you can feel for yourself and the parts of your identity that was split from you, you will be welcoming them back into the whole you. The result of a split is a conscious, living thought form that wants everything that a living thing wants. They want to grow. They want to survive. They want love, and they want to be loved. The way to heal a split and to move toward wholeness is to provide gentle attention, profound respect, and deep appreciation for what the intent of the split was. By bonding with these pieces of yourself, you draw them home into wholeness. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.